Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I bet you anything, you're just jonesing over more angles and more views of all of the distraction news out there, whether it be the Mueller, whether it be, you know, what's going on with Congress, what's going on with the president, SCOTUS. They're all distractions. And so we're very focused. And the reason we're focused, the ratification debate, I've already proven to you that it was stated and stipulated in the contract negotiations that Congress could not pass a bill that would not apply to them. That was understood in Massachusetts. It was stated, and we've already got it here. So what we'll do is we'll probably go through a summary of those highlights. But if you want to go back through the podcast of last week, there you go. You'll get the Massachusetts illumination on the fact that the Congress was not able to put themselves above the laws they pass. It was immoral to do that. And it's interesting that the one state that was very focused on morality actually brought that up. They're the ones that actually highlighted that little tidbit. So the listen number, if you want to listen to this show and cannot stream the entire show, we have two lines, 605-562-4209. And the other line is 605-313-0599. Now, I also, you know, I understand everybody is possessed with the news cycle. It is an addiction that must be overcome because there's no good that comes from it. These are news stories that don't go anywhere. And in all honesty, we're not going to see the tangible differences. If you want to actually get the government out of our lives, if you want to protect liberty, you're going to have to do exactly what the framers did. Were the framers consumed with the nuances of the day, what was going on with Continental Congress and what was going on with, well, maybe the crops, because you know that's how they made their money. I can tell you Madison was, I don't want to say fixated, but he was very interested in how the weather was because it had a direct effect on how they were able to, you know, produce and harvest the crops that they were. They didn't have plumbing and pumping and irrigation. Well, the only irrigation they had was from runoffs or from streams or what have you. It was very archaic in technology. But of course, that's how it was back then. Anyway, as we move forward, we're in the North Carolina debates, and that's where we get into a little bit of slavery. We're going to cover a couple of comments from Mr. Spate and Iredell on slavery today. And we should wrap up what is left of the debates for North Carolina and should be able to move forward into the next state. What state will we go to? I don't know. It'll all depend on when we get there. But thank you for coming along with the ride. And as a matter of fact, thank you very much for continuing to tune in, continuing to listen to what our framers actually said that Constitution meant. There's nothing more important. And if you hear what these men were saying about this Constitution, its limitations, and how it was to be applied, it should be a wake-up call for you so that you can understand and actually take a stand and say, that's not what you're supposed to be doing. The fact that they have a standing army, and it's not just a standing army, they have divisions and divisions and divisions of a standing army with every federal enforcement bureaucracy out there. Every single one of those is a standing army. If they carry guns, they are an armed force that is out trying to enforce their law. Pretty soon, EPA bureaucrats will be carrying automatic weapons and bulletproof vests and helmets and everything else, just like the rest of the thugs. Anyway, And, you know, I believe that most of these people that go in and get these jobs, they don't really think they're thugs, but they think they have the force of the law. They think they are doing a constitutionally supported job, and it's not. And once we get Wyoming stood up, we're going to be there, because Wyoming will be able to reach out and lead the rest of the states. The cowboys will be herding the rest of the flyover states and the rest of the dark red states. If not, if they cannot do that, then it's going to be lights out, and you'll say goodbye to the Constitution. We're running out of time. Most people think, oh, well, there's convictions coming. Even if there are convictions coming, even if it's only going to be token convictions, there will be no draining of the swamp. There are only a few tangible methods that will drain the swamp in some effective way. Our first right in passing that one Madison Bill of Rights amendment that's still lingering out there, that's one way to displace the swamp. It won't drain it completely, but it's one way to displace it. And another way to help drain the swamp would be rescinding the 17th Amendment. It doesn't get rid of it completely, but it does fix some of our problems. The only way we're going to be able to actually drain the swamp is through Republic Review, having the states audit the Constitution against the government and actually identifying all of the government violations. Just as Governor Johnston said in my reading last week, in my very last show, in my last episode, he came out with a very lucid comment, and his comment was this: Congress cannot assume any other powers than those expressly given them without a palpable violation. Pretty clear to me. Anyway, that's why we're reading these things. There is nothing more important than understanding the absolute terms of this contract or compact of the Constitution. So let me jump forward. And one, I've already thanked you for tuning in. As a matter of fact, because you've been tuning in and because we've been doing really well, we're in the top 10, at least we start off in the top 10. I know there's lots of people that come in streaming later and help bring other people up. But we have been constant in the top 10 on streaming with live streams rankings, as well as other rankings out there. But I'm primarily focused on live stream at this point. Talk, I think it's livestreamtalk.com. I don't want to just mischaracterize that. It is, what is it? Hold it now. Doggone it. It is Talk Stream Live. There we go. I had to look it up for you. But if you go to Talk Stream Live, you'll actually see where Red State is ranking in the streaming. And so you're more than welcome to, tune in via that way, or you're more than welcome to tune in other ways. You'll notice that Red State Top Radio is actually in the top 10, top 20, almost all the time, regardless of us. But I can tell you that my slot coming on at 3 o'clock, when Mark Levin and a lot of other people are coming on in the evening drive commute, just the fact that I'm in these rankings, it means something. I have no idea what it really means, but it does mean something. And I want to thank you for tuning in and tagging along. Well, we also need your help. I would love it if you want to try and call in. We would love to have your feedback. Here's an opportunity to provide feedback. 425-270-5416. Feedback on the show, but more importantly, if you have purchased and have tried Red State Coffee, give us a call and let us know what you think. This is a company that is supporting us, and we really appreciate the fact that they're supporting us. And I can't emphasize enough, if you want to support this show, buy Red State Coffee. If you don't drink coffee and you know people that do, buy it for Christmas, buy it for their birthday, what have you. And especially if they're a liberal. they'll probably still drink the coffee, but they won't be happy. Everything that I've heard is this is very top-notch coffee. We also have the crowdfunding on GoFundMe. It is Reclaiming the Republic, and you can find that as well as the link to Red State Coffee on, let me see here. What is my webpage? What is that? ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. That's right, folks. ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We need your help. We need your help directly, and that is probably our biggest plea, but I really want to get moving forward. Send us an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, and we will be happy to help you get engaged, happy to help you get involved. So let me dive into Mr. Iredell. This is the North Carolina debates. And again, my focus today is on the North Carolina debates of the ratification of the Constitution. These are the terms of the contract. It's pretty clear, folks. This is what we have to understand. This is how they defined it. So, the instrument ought to contain such a definition of authority as would leave no doubt, and if there be any ambiguity, it ought to be admitted. He says this construction is not agreeable to the people, though he acknowledges it is a right one. In my opinion, there is no man of any reason at all, but must be satisfied with so clear and plain a definition. If the Congress should claim any power not given them, it would be as bare a usurpation as making a king in America. How much more powerful can that be? And Mr. Iredell hits it out of the park on this one. He basically comes right out and says, if Congress tries to take on any new power, it's the same thing as creating a king. And these folks were afraid of monarchies. We're at a hard break, so we'll be right back with more of this as soon as we have finished these two promos. So we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. All right, so Mr. Iredell was hitting it out of the park here. So this is going to be one of those highlights at 11 type of thing. And so when we kind of wrap up all of these debates, I'm just going to go right back and put it all together for you to show you that when Congress were those serving in Congress were not above the law, that they had to fall within the laws they passed. And somehow we've let them get out from underneath us. And that's because nobody understands these definitions and how the Constitution was sold to the states. Why are these debates so important? Because these debates are legal binding documents that actually assert very specific things. As long as you keep these debates away from the Constitution, they can tell you what that Constitution means and what do you know? What can you do to prove it wrong? When you come forward and say, oh, nope, that's not how they defined it. You have to stay within these definitions. And so here is the interesting thing, because I hear people, you know, there's a Wilkow. He's one that says, all I need is the Constitution. I can refute any argument. And I'm telling you, he can't. The only way you can refute any argument. And why? Why is that? Because the Supreme Court will create all sorts of bamboozling, shenanigan arguments that will grant more power to the federal government, and they'll do it sideways. And in doing so, next thing you know, the federal government has usurped even more power and more power. And based on these powers and bureaucracies and unconstitutional laws that they're creating, they are dragging us down the darkest dump, the darkest sewage pipe that they could actually bring us down. And it's going to be an ugly haul if we actually get down through that when they take and try to discard our Constitution. That's why these debates are so important. Bottom line, they are failing to comply to these terms that were defined to the states. And now it's a day of reckoning. You can't tell me that this is not the divine hand of providence that actually created these notes. And now you can actually hear for yourself how the Constitution was defined at its origin when it was being established. Mr. Iredell says this, and I'm just going to repeat what I just get, that home run and the rest of the follow-through connected to that swing. If the Congress should claim any power not given them, it would be as bare a usurpation as making a king in America. If this Constitution be adopted, it must be presumed the instrument will be in the hands of every man in America to see whether authority be usurped, and any person by inspecting it may see if the power claimed be enumerated. If it be not, he will know it be a usurpation. Well, I'm telling you, folks, that's true, but that's only if you understand the definition. That's why you have to have these ratification debates, so that people can actually understand, oh, well, if it's not listed in the Constitution, in the amendments and or treaties, then it's unconstitutional. They can't. This is clearly a usurpation. The next man up is Mr. Johnston, and we already cited one of his previous lucid arguments regarding Congress and usurpation. And Mr. Johnston expressed great astonishment that the people were alarmed on the subject of religion. This, he said, must have arisen from the great pains which had been taken to prejudice men's minds against the Constitution. He begged leave to add the following few observations to what had been so ably said by the gentleman last up. And if you want to know who that gentleman last up is, let me know and I'll send it to you. I read the Constitution over and over, but I could not see any one cause of apprehension or jealousy on this subject regarding religion. When I heard there were apprehensions that the Pope of Rome could be the President of the United States, I was greatly astonished. It might be, well, we know the Pope of Rome is not a citizen. And back in those days, the citizenship was a lot different. And when we talk to Dr. Vile about that coming down the pike here, we'll get into what was citizenship before and what is it now and how it's changed. But anyway, I was greatly astonished. It might as well be said that the King of England or France or the Grand Turk could be chosen to that office. It would have been as good an argument. It appears to me that it would have been dangerous if Congress could intermeddle with the subject of religion. True religion is derived from a much higher source than human laws. When any attempt, and I can't get over the fact of how they're driving human laws as divine laws over God's laws. Anyway, if Congress could intermeddle on this subject, true religion is derived from a much bigger or much higher source than human laws. when any attempt is made by any government to restrain men's consciences, no good consequence can possibly follow. It is apprehended that Jews, Mahometans, pagans, and etc. may be elected to high offices under the government of the United States. Those who are Mahometans, that's what they're calling them. That's the Muslims, I'm sorry. So Mahometans, or I tell you, I'm bad with names, or any other who are not professors of the Christian religion can never be elected to the office of president. Now, get this. This is how it's being stated. Because didn't we have a Mahometan that got into office? So I'm going to reread this. True religion is derived from a much higher source than human laws. When any attempt is made by any government to restrain men's consciences, no good consequence can possibly follow. It is apprehended that Jews, Mohammedans, pagans, and etc. may be elected to high offices under this government of the United States. Those who are Mohammedans or any others who are not professors of the Christian religion can never be elected to the office of president or other high office, but in one of two cases. First, if the people of America lay aside the Christian religion altogether, it may happen. Should this unfortunately take place, the people will choose such men as they think as they do themselves. Another case is this: if any person of such description should, notwithstanding their religion, acquire the confidence and esteem of the people of America by their good conduct and practice of virtue, they may be chosen. I leave it to the gentleman candor to judge what probability there is of the people's choosing men of different sentiments of themselves. That is a nice little comment. And he's obviously making a point, but he didn't get into the actual standards of elections, that you had to be either a citizen, you had to be a citizen of a natural born citizen, and so forth. I honestly believe that there are people that have a real hardcore problem with liberty and the Constitution. And obviously, communists, they do not believe. And I think anybody that is a part of the communist ideology, they should be constrained from being able to hold any office within a representative form of government. That's one thing for them to be a possibly they could be a good water board, you know, person. But when it comes down to being a representative of government who has the ability to write laws, they would be willing, and they would not have a compass to basically protect individual liberty, because there are way too many people. It's not just Mohammedans. There are way too many people who think, oh, there should be a law for that. We ought to have a law against that, keep people from being able to do that. I'll give you a case in point real quick while I go down this rat hole. I noticed a post that somebody in one of the groups, one of the many groups I'm in, that was on my news feed, and this person said, why can't we be like Poland? Because Poland banned all forms of abortion, supposedly. I don't know if it's fake news or not. But the point is this person was literally throwing caution to the wind and saying, we need to completely ban abortion. And it started making me think, well, why don't we just go the next step further and ban sin? Well, what does that mean? Okay, so we already know, we already have a guide of how to live and how we're supposed to behave, right? That's in the Bible. And there's also, you know, the New Testament, Old Testament, the higher laws and so forth. And so the question is, should we have laws that actually say, you know, that sin should be banned? What happened in the very beginning? And no, we do not want government to do this. We don't want government to make those types of constraints. I'm not a fan of abortion. I definitely find infanticide not just repugnant, but evil. But I'm here to tell you that when all those men with stones were getting ready to stone the adulteress, and Christ happened to come upon them, And he asked, or I forget how it all started, but he basically got, you know, they gave him the law. And then he said, those of you who are without sin, cast the first stone. Clearly, this is the law. But let me put it to a higher law for you. Those of you without sin, cast the first stone. And then what he told the adulteress is he said, he didn't forgive her. He didn't say adultery's okay. He said, go and sin no more. Which means that the concept of repentance and, you know, living a righteous life, following the commandments, is how she should be living. And so I'll have to wrap this up when we come back and how to put this into context with the abortion concepts and these other types of moral laws, because that's how we're dealing with, especially at the federal level, and the problems that come with that or consequences with that. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So one of the favorite questions of the born-again Christians, and, you know, what would Christ do? Would Christ actually create laws that, while we're in this state, while we are, you know, to be tempted, while we are to suffer and those types of things, it's different in, you know, I can understand in God's presence in heaven and so forth, but I don't want to get into theology. But my point is that we got to be very careful when we take the liberty away from people. Now, we cannot subsidize. I think it is repugnant to subsidize anybody. So if you can't afford an abortion, well, we'll pay for it. Are you kidding me? It's one thing for a philanthropic organization to fund that, but it should never be done at the taxpayer's expense. Taxpayers should never be paying for those types of things, period. That is not compassionate service. However, I think this is a problem that you have to solve. I do believe that if you have an overwhelming vote that people want to, you know, ban something like that, you know, like you want to ban the sale of alcohol in your state, well, then you'll probably find that you'll pass that and there will be lots of liquor stores on the other side of the border in the neighboring states, to help accommodate those folks that, you know, are being oppressed
by, you know, draconian types of government. We have to be really careful. What we want to do and what we need to do, remember this scale of liberty. I talk about this every once in a while, that those of you who are on the, you know, if you believe in full liberty, that means that you have to let people choose for themselves, and then they have to be responsible and accountable for the decisions and or mistakes from that. Now, it's one thing, somebody go buy alcohol and go get drunk and, you know, they, you know, get hung over in their own home. They don't cause any harm. Well, it's another thing if they get behind the wheel. So if you want to create laws that go after people for doing things that possibly could harm others, I mean, those, okay. Again, I think it needs to be done with not just a majority, but a super majority when you are taking away the liberties of others. The framers were very clear. The reason back in those days they didn't even have these laws is because everybody was Christian. Everybody was held to standards at church. That's one of the reasons why Jefferson was not allowed to bear testimony for himself when he was being tried, because he wasn't a Christian in good standing. That was a very common practice back in those days in the court system. I kind of wish we had those days all over again. Because religion had a role in getting people to obey, you know, the commandments and so forth without the, you know, the heavy hand of government. You were shamed, you were outcast, or whatever. And more people actually lived within the constraints of their faith than not. Those people sought to do good, and they were brought up with morality and so forth. I talked to people, and I don't know why they don't get it, that, you know, they think that we can have an awakening. We have to have a removal of government first before we can have an awakening, because as long as the education system can pump, because that's draconian as well, the education system having a full monopoly and dictating to your kids what they have to believe and think, that is draconian as well. So you can't look at that and then say, well, we want to have something just like that on the opposite end. What do they call that? They call that hypocrisy. So let me move forward. This is where Mr. Speight makes a comment regarding, these are just highlights again. And so Mr. Speight further explained the clause that the limitation of this trade, this is the 1808 trade, and I believe this is in Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution, that the limitation of this trade to the term of 20 years was a compromise between the northern states and the southern states. South Carolina and Georgia wished to extend the term. The northern states insisted on the entire abolition of the trade period. They wanted to just get rid of it altogether, but there was a 20-year delay that stopped the importation of slaves, that the state of North Carolina had not thought proper to pass any laws prohibiting the importation of slaves, and therefore its delegation in the convention did not think themselves authorized to contend for an immediate prohibition of it. So it was a compromise that they actually stopped the importation of slaves 20 years out, which was 1808. The interesting thing, and one of the things I remember reading, is how Madison got upset during that compromise, because he said, who in the heck is going to remember 20 years after we pass this Constitution that there's that little clause in the Constitution to stop this? We need to stop this now. Well, I think it was the divine hand of providence that Madison was president 20 years later, and that's why those efforts were moved forward and they actually shut down and stopped the slave trade from importing slaves. Anyway, Mr. Iredell begged to leave to explain the reason for this clause as well, and this is, I believe, the three-fifths clause. And in some of the northern states, or actually, I think it was either the three-fifths. Well, let me just read it and we'll figure it out. In some of the northern states, they have emancipated all their slaves. Oh, okay, this is the clause that says if somebody escapes, you have to turn them back over to their property owners, whatever. If any of our slaves, said he, go there and remain there a certain time, they would, by the present laws, be entitled to their freedom so that their masters could not go get them again. this would be extremely prejudicial to the inhabitants of the southern states. And to prevent it, this clause is inserted into the Constitution to stop states from being able to, I'm inserting this, to stop states from being able to stop the return of slaves back to their southern slave masters. Though the word slave is not mentioned, this is the meaning of it. The northern delegates, owning to their own particular scruples on the subject of slavery, did not choose the word slave to be mentioned. And actually, if I remember correctly, they were still practicing indentured servants as well. If you were a slave or an indentured servant, because there were people that were still coming to America, whether they be Irish, whether they be from Italy or what have you, anybody that was coming, they could get a contract to go and be an indentured servant, as well as being slaves. And I think that's why they were in the servitude for that clause. Anyway, this was one of the few states that actually brought out and actually spoke very clearly regarding the terms of slavery. I think one of the interesting arguments I remember reading was Madison talking about the three-fifths rule, because he called out the hypocrisy of the South. They wanted full representation, but they treated the slaves as property. And he says, well, you can't have both things. Either they're property or they're people, and they deserve representation. And if they're people and deserve representation, then they should be free to flow and so forth. And so it was a big compromise. It was another compromise to kind of recognize the fact that the South was oppressive to, obviously, the fact that they had slavery. That was just an oppressive market of labor, period. Anyway, let's move forward. The jurisdiction in North Carolina was discussed by Mr. Spate. And he says, Mr. Chairman, the gentleman insinuates that differences existed in the federal convention respecting the clause which he objects to. Whoever told him so was wrong, for I declare that in that convention, the unanimous desire was all to keep separate the distinct and distinct the objects of the jurisdiction of the federal from the state judiciary. They wished to separate them as judiciously as possible and to consult the ease, convenience of the people. The gentleman objects to the cognizance of all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution and the laws of the United States. So in other words, if it's not within the enumerated powers, it is not within the Constitution or laws of the United States. This objection is very astonishing. When any government is established, it ought to have power to enforce its laws, or else it might as well have no power. But that is the use of judiciary. Interesting how he said that, but I'll read that again. What but that is the use of a judiciary? The gentleman from his profession must know that no government can exist without a judiciary to enforce its laws by distinguishing the disobedient from the rest of the people and imposing sanctions for securing the execution of the laws as to the inconvenience of the distance attendance. Congress has the power of establishing inferior tribunals in each state so as to accommodate every citizen. As Congress have it in their power, will they not do it? Are we to elect men who will wantonly and unnecessarily betray us? So he was kind of pointing out a couple of things, but the one thing I wanted to point out was that the laws that the federal government had were only those laws that were within the purview of the Constitution. It had to be within those objects, those enumerated powers, period. And the fact that they were going to put and place different judiciaries throughout the states, okay, well, that's nice, so the people don't have to travel all the way to the seat of government to be represented. Well, we're at another hard break. So when we come back, we're going to have Mr. Bloodworth talking about jurisdiction as well. So please stay tuned. We will be right back with more from the North Carolina ratification debates. Thank you so much. folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue, to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so Mr. Bloodworth is up next, but I want to stop real quick and just basically point out that this is not a coincidence that these documents were written in the first place and why we need them now. There's no doubt in my mind that somebody knew what we were going to be facing and what we were going to have to deal with. And so the fact that we have these and we have the ability to go through these is not a coincidence whatsoever. Now, let me just dive forward with what Mr. Bloodworth talks about or states during the North Carolina ratification debates. And this is regarding jurisdiction. And he says, "Mr. Chairman, the worthy gentleman up last has given me information on the subject, which I had never heard before. Hearing so many opinions, I did not know which was right. The honorable gentleman said that the state courts and the courts of the United States would have concurrent jurisdiction. I beg the committee to reflect what would be the consequence of such measures. It has never been considered that the trial by jury was one of the greatest rights of the people. I ask whether, if such causes go into the federal court, the trial by jury is not cut off, and whether there is any security that will have justice done. I ask if there be any security that we shall have juries in civil causes. In criminal causes or cases, there are to be juries, but there is no provision made for having civil causes tried by jury. This concurrent jurisdiction is inconsistent with the security of that great right. If it not be, I would wish to hear how it is secured. I have listened with attention to what the learned gentlemen have said and have endeavored to see whether their arguments have any weight, but I have found none in them. Many, so obviously he is an anti-federalist or just a person that's just trying to get the facts here. And he goes on and says, many words have been spoken and long time taken up, but with me, they have gone in one ear and out the other. It would give me much pleasure to hear that the trial by jury was secured. Now, the fact is that it goes back down to whether it is in the Constitution or whether it's not. Now, we actually understand that that was one of the things that they wanted to make sure they secured, and that's why a trial by jury was inserted into the Bill of Rights, because it was not in the body of the Constitution. But Mr. Davey goes on and says this: if I understand the gentleman right, his objection was not to the defined jurisdiction, but to the general jurisdiction, which is expressed thus: the general or the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. In other words, they have to be constitutional laws that are within the realms and the powers of the Constitution. And he says, and also the appellate jurisdiction in some instances. Every member who has read the Constitution with attention must observe that there are certain fundamental principles in it, both of a positive and negative nature, which, being intended for the general advantage of the community, ought not to be violated by any future legislation of the particular states. Every member will agree that the positive regulations ought to be carried into execution, and that the negative restrictions ought not to disregard or be violated. Without a judiciary, the injunctions of the Constitution may be disobeyed, and the positive regulations neglected or contravened. There are certain prohibitory provisions in this Constitution, the wisdom and propriety of which must strike every reflecting mind and certainly meet with the warmest approbation of every citizen of this state. It provides that no state shall, and this is a quote, that no state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay any imposts or duties or imports or exports, except that they may be absolutely necessary for executing its inspection laws, that no preference shall be given by any regulation of commerce or revenue to the ports of one state over those of another, and that no state shall emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender of payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligations of contracts. These restrictions ought to supersede the laws of particular states. With respect to the prohibitory vision or provisions that no duty or impost shall be laid by any particular state which is so highly favored of us and the other non-importing states, the importing states might make laws laying duties notwithstanding, and the Constitution might be violated with impunity if there were no power in the general government to correct and counteract such laws. So he's just kind of pointing out that, you know, if there was no judiciary, there was no way to enforce these laws, then New York and some of these other states would be able to, you know, these port states would have been able to start passing laws and taking advantage of the other states, and there wouldn't have been any form of enforcement of some of these negatives placed upon those port states, that they can't pass taxes and or what have you. Well, now, so what this does is this kind of wraps up the highlights that I had. And there's actually more out there in the North Carolina debates. The North Carolina debates are one of the most extensive debates that are, you know, that get into a lot of the same arguments as Virginia. And I like using the North Carolina debates because some of the ways they discussed and highlighted things is very illuminating, if you ask me. Now, one of the things I want to do before we move forward, because I want to kind of highlight those things that were mentioned before that to me really stood out. And so the first thing that really stood out, like I started off the show with, was by Governor Johnston. And Governor Johnston points out that I'm going to quote him, quote, the Congress cannot assume any other powers than those expressly given them without a palpable violation of the Constitution. So when Congress assumed the power over agriculture, when they created the Department of Agriculture, Food, Drug Administration, Energy, Education, Healthcare, Homeland Security, whether that be the Housing and Urban Development, there's so many.
those are usurpations. They're blatant violations of the Constitution. And this is Governor Johnston saying this. It's not just GR saying this. This is how it was defined. Mr. Iredell goes on, a very similar bent, a little bit later on, and he says this, quote, "If the Congress should claim any power not given them, it would be as bare a usurpation as making a king in America. If this Constitution be adopted, it must be presumed the instrument will be in the hands of every man in America to see whether authority be usurped, and any person by inspecting it may see if the power claimed be enumerated. If it not be, he will know it be a usurpation." And so, boing, boing, I mean, he really hits it out of the park on that one. And Governor Johnston comes back a little bit later on and says this, "When any attempt is made by any government to restrain men's consciences, no good consequence can possibly follow. It is apprehended that Jews, Mohammedans, pagans," I really butchered the Mohammedans earlier, so I'm just doing a better job here. "The Jews, Mohammedans, pagans, etc., may be elected to high offices under this government of the United States. Those who are Mohammedans or any others who are not professors of the Christian religion can never be elected to office of president or any high office, but in one of two cases. First, if the people of America lay aside their Christian religion altogether, it may happen. Should this unfortunality take place, the people will choose such men as they think as they do themselves. Another case is, if any person of such description should, notwithstanding their religion, acquire the confidence and esteem of the people of America by their good conduct and practice of virtue, they may be chosen. I leave it to the gentleman's candor to judge what probability there is of the people's choosing men of different sentiments from themselves." Now, one of the things I want to point out, because we do know that we had a hybrid president that was both Mohammedan and Christian, and that was Barack Obama. And Barack Hussein Obama. And so what we have today, folks, is the fact that the news media was able to filter. In other words, you didn't have unfiltered information. You had very filtered information, and the news media is the ones that want to play God makers to ensure that the people that they want to propel their agenda, whatever that is, and it's a globalist agenda, I'm here to tell you, that the news media are the ones that are actually keeping the good folks of America from really knowing the truth. And so there is merit, to go back to the 14th Amendment of the Bill of Rights, there is merit that the states start passing laws that keep the journalist profession clean and clear and objective, and go after those that are trying to grind axes and agendas. I am G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. We'll be back.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.